You are listening to an Emmanuel Community Church podcast. For more sermons or information about the church, visit our website at www.emmanuelcommunity.org.
Not long after my wife and I were married, we made a trip out east because her cousin was graduating from Annapolis, the Naval Academy. And so we drove out to Maryland, and we were part of this this graduation that's had more pomp and circumstance than I've ever experienced before. It was a great celebration for him to graduate as an officer in the Marines. I got a hoo-ha last night too, thanks. Over the course of time, 26 plus years of our marriage, every so often we would get a phone call or a message or an email that would say that her cousin had been moved up in rank as he served. He just continued to kind of climb. Today, he and his family are deployed in a place that we do not know. We don't know where they are. And he is a brigadier general. He sat in my backyard when we lived in a sleepy little town. And he asked me about our life in this small town. And I was kind of bemoaning this sense of being in a place that not much really happened. I said, yeah, our families go out and they were young and they went out and played on the playgrounds and we never really worried about it. They'd be there all day. They'd just run the course in the neighborhood. We didn't lock our vehicles. We didn't lock our homes. No one locked anything there. And I just kind of said to him, it just is a place where not really much anything happens. And he looked at me and he said, it sounds perfect. And I realized in those short words that he was communicating to me that he had dedicated his entire life, every part of his journey, in order that someone else might benefit by having freedom in a sleepy little town with no danger and no fear. U.S. Colonel, Air Force Colonel Walter Hitchcock said these words for the first time, freedom is not free. But long ago, Jesus taught us about what it is to follow him and to be his disciple, and he also suggested to all of us who would call ourselves Christian or would call ourselves followers of Christ that there is a cost. There is a price that each one of us have been called to pay along the way. It's from Luke chapter 14, verses 25 through 35, and we're going to talk about Jesus and our relationships with our parents and our families. He's going to talk about what it is to consider building something and having the ability to complete that. We're going to talk about kings who might consider going against other kings in this passage. But it starts with these words, large crowds, huge groups of people were following Jesus. They were traveling along with him. And we're reminded that Jesus now is traveling for Jerusalem, where he is going to be tried, suffer, and crucified as part of God's plan and purpose for his life, that he might pay a price to give freedom to many. Perhaps we need to be reminded of the whole course of this journey. It started in Luke chapter 9, verse 51, where it says in Scripture, as the time approached, there was a time in Jesus' life, and that time had come to its fruition. As the time approached for him to be taken up to heaven, Jesus resolutely set out for Jerusalem. You get the picture of a person who's not looking to the sides and would not consider turning around, but is faced and forward to the destination where God is taking them. I like better what it says in the King James versions, where it says, he steadfastly set his face to go to Jerusalem. Just before this indication of Scripture that this was now God's next step in the purpose where he will finish out what God has purposed and planned for him to do, it says that he said this to his disciples, the Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected by the elders, the chief priests, and the teachers of the law. He must be killed and on the third day raised to life. He knew exactly where God was taking him. Even though his disciples didn't understand. His very next words to them are words that we are going to hear again today. For the first time, he tells them to count their costs. He said to them all, if anyone would come after me, he must deny himself, take up his cross daily, and follow me. As part of that journey that we've been going through in Luke, when Jesus faced Pharisees along the way, it says that Pharisees and the teachers of the law began to oppose him fiercely and to besiege him with questions, waiting to catch him in something he might say. As he walked, the opposition to his walk increased. Jesus expressed in Luke chapter 12 the emotion of even for himself what it was to face this destination that God called him to. I have come to bring fire on earth and how I wished it were already kindled, but I have a baptism to undergo and how distressed I am until it is completed. And in this passage, he talks about bringing division between mother and daughter, father and son, mother-in-law and daughter-in-law, suggesting the costs. His teachings and his examples were intensified by the finality of this journey. And so when we get to Luke 14, where we've been for several weeks, it says, on one Sabbath, as Jesus was eating in the house of a prominent Pharisee, he was being what? By those who opposed him, he was being carefully watched in the middle and the midst of this meal. And we've learned over the last several weeks how he taught them about where to sit around the meal, how to take the low position. And then he shared with them the parable of the great banquet that we just unpacked last week. And we learned that God is preparing a meal for everyone who might come in and fellowship with him. He desires that fellowship. He has invited not just a few, but many, many people. And even when people have rejected him and it angers him, his response was to open up the doors even wider to let more come in because he wants his house full. This is the story that is just before what we're talking about today, this call to discipleship. Just after this portion of Scripture where we're called to discipleship, the cost of discipleship, comes three stories about the love of God seeking those who are lost, who are outside the kingdom. And Jesus tells a story about his table service, his community around the table with sinners and tax collectors, and explains the fact that God desires those who are lost to be in his fellowship. On one side, the great banquet. On the other side, these stories of a father reaching out to lost people. The cost of what it is to be a disciple of Jesus. His call to discipleship penetrates any casual pursuit of an invitation to him. It shows that to follow him, you must be like him in the journey of doing what God has called you to do, his plan and purpose in your life. As Jesus moves to Jerusalem, the reality is he will never pass this way again. Two things this weekend, and two things only. Jesus defines for us in this passage what it is to know the costs of following him. And they are implicit, not explicit. God, Jesus does not tell us, if you do this, 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 then you will have fulfilled the cost. No, because the costs are different for each of us according to the plan and purpose of each of our lives. The costs are implicit and apply to each one of us. He also challenged them, and he challenges us today to consider and estimate the cost of what it is to be his disciple. Those two things. God expects us to say yes by saying no. Grandparents are great, aren't they? You know, grandparents are yes people. Kids love to go see their grandparents because grandparents just kind of dote on them, and they, you know, they like to spoil. I see some ladies right now going, yeah, 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 yeah. You know, they just love to spoil their grandkids and just do great things for them. They couldn't do that for their kids. It's kind of that same expression of that part of God, the nature of God that we've been talking about, where he just wants us to know that he loves us, and he just wants to embrace us and bless us. We talked about his blessing. We've talked about just that sense of his invitation in. Grandparents kind of represent that. Now, on the other side, parents kind of represent the no party, right? You know, you send your kid to the grandparents' house, and they get to eat whatever they want for a day, and then they come home and think, that's the way I can eat tomorrow. And the parents say no. But behind that no, they're saying yes to something else. Every time we say no to something, we're saying yes to something else. So when the child says, I just want to eat sweets all day, the parent says no because they're saying yes to the child's well-being, their health, and their longevity of life. When the child goes, it would be fun to go out and play in the street today, the parent is saying no because of their well-being, their health, and their longevity of life. When that child discovers crayons and paint for the first time and paints the wall of a house and just does their artwork right there, and the parents are saying no, it's for their well-being, their health, and the longevity of their life. Behind every no, there is a yes to something else. And Jesus starts these expectations that God expects us to say no to some things to say yes to him. This great crowd that's following after him, he turns to them and he said, if anyone comes to me and does not hate his father and mother, his wife, his children, his spouse, his children, his brothers and sisters, even his own life, he cannot be my disciple. Well, understand this is a hyperbole. This is Jesus making a statement that exaggerates the point to show the importance and depth of its meaning. Jesus says, even those most close to us, those most associated with us, they might have expectations that don't match the expectations and purposes that God have for our lives, and we have to be able to say no to even those most close to us to say yes to what God has called us to. Otherwise, we cannot be his disciple. And anyone who does not carry his cross and follow me cannot be my disciple. We often see pictures of the cross and Jesus, and you see the entire cross, the cross beam section and the standard pole, and it's on his shoulder, and you'll see him kind of going through the streets of Jerusalem, trying with his energy after being, after suffering and being beaten. We see that picture, but more likely it was just the cross beam that the criminal would be strapped to. And as they put that crossbeam in and the criminal began to journey through the town to go to the place of their death, it would be an announcement to all those who saw them that this was their last walk. Some of you know the older movie, The Green Mile. In that movie, it was about criminals who had been sentenced to death, and their time of execution would come. And the officers would escort them down this hallway with green floors and green walls. And when they opened the door, they'd call out the name of that prisoner. We'll call him Joe. And one of the officers would yell out, "Joe is walking the green mile." Every step closer to one purpose. Nothing else matters. Nothing else matters. Jesus calls us to pick up that same cross, to say that all those other things that we would say yes to, that call our name, that we would say no, that we might say yes to the plan and purpose of God. That's what God expects from us. Those who would call themselves disciples. God expects us to say yes by saying no. And every time we say no to something, we are saying yes to something else. And so for these two purposes today, to count the cost, to understand what God has called us to and to count the cost in our life, and also to estimate what it is to apply that cost to our walk, our daily journey, I offer three questions. First question is this: what are you saying no to in order to follow? What are you saying no to in order to follow Jesus? If you're not saying no, then you aren't saying yes. Jesus goes on to implicitly define what it is to count the cost of discipleship. Suppose one of you wants to build a tower. Now, that would be quite common, because in their homes, they would build their home, and around the backyard of their home, they'd put a fence, and that would be where all their goods were, and their garden, and the way they sustain their life. And often, or sometimes, a person would build a watchtower on the back corner of that backyard so they could kind of watch out for all their things. So suppose any one of you might want to build a tower. Will he not first sit down and estimate the cost to see if he has enough money to complete it? For if he lays a foundation and is not able to finish, everyone who sees it will ridicule him, saying, "This fellow began to build and was not able to finish." Often in our journey with Jesus, we look back and we measure our commitment to Jesus by the place that we started. We say, "I was saved," or "I came to Christ," or "I was baptized at this point. God took me through this journey on the backside of my," and we tell the stories of what God has done in our life. But discipleship is actually measured to where we're going, where we finish. The question is, did he have the ability to complete the tower? Was he able to finish it? And if he was not able to finish it, he was ridiculed for it. Part of the cost of discipleship is to realize that God wants to take each of us somewhere. He has a design and a desire for us to fulfill. He's calling us to finish the journey, not to start it. He expects us to invest ourselves with the end in mind. Focus now on where you plan to finish. In just a few weeks, end of this month, we will commission a family, the Glunt family, who are traveling with their children and will spend at least 2 years in Thailand as missionaries. They're from our local body, and it has been a journey, a process where God has led them to what he's called them to. On the back of your notes, you can read along with me. These are Brian's own words. "I was in customer service. Every year I got a raise or promotion. I thought things were going well, but I was putting my security in personal achievements. When the economy turned sour, I had to ask myself, what is the focus of my life?
I had to choose if I was going to look for a new job or not, but we knew we would always live with the regret of not pursuing this one opportunity, what Christ called us to do. So we chose to do the thing that made us uncomfortable. Now note, it was small steps at first. Going into the community to simply serve food, taking a mission trip, and then leading trips myself. When the time came, it wasn't a huge, giant leap to go to Thailand, because they had decided now where God was taking them to where he would take them to complete the purposes. So many people say we could never do that, but we would have said the same thing 6 years ago. Be open to what God is laying on your heart. Measuring the cost of discipleship and understanding the cost of discipleship is to understand that God is leading you somewhere. So where are you investing your life? Second question, where do you look to finish? If you were to take a personal inventory of your life now as a disciple of Jesus Christ, where are you on the journey? Are you looking to what you've done or to where you're going? God expects us to totally surrender. Suppose a king is about to go to war against another king. Will he first not sit down and consider whether he is able with 10,000 men to oppose the one coming against him with 20,000? If he is not able, he will send a delegation while the other is still a long way off and will ask for terms of peace. In the same way, any of you who does not give up everything he has cannot be my disciple. Now, I can't relate to being a king. But I do have a way. Some of you like to play strategy games. I like to play strategy games. I always pick one. And right now my strategy game is I get on the internet and I compete my strategy against other people's strategy. And there are times when I get into a battle and I realize I am outclassed. My strategy will not hold up. And at the bottom of my screen, there's a button to hit and it just simply says, surrender. Our God, a mighty warrior, he's a consuming fire. In victory you reign. We triumph in your name. The recognition that God has called us to surrender our lives to his lordship, to his kingship, and we must along the way give up all else in order to serve him. In the same way, any of you who does not give up everything he has, it sounds like we need to abandon all our earthly goods. And some people are called to do that. We have two families now doing that in our church, giving up earthly goods to do what God has called them to do. But other families are not. My daughter just attended a Youth for Christ event this last week where she came home talking about the pool and the pool table and the ping pong table and this great experience because those people were willing to give up their ownership of what they had to serve others, to use those for God's purposes. It's not just giving it up. It is allowing it to be used for the purposes of God. Another way it's said in the Young's literal translation is to say, who doth take leave of all that he himself have, to leave it behind, to let it go. But my favorite translation of this particular phrase is, if you do not bid farewell to all you have, by one of my former seminary professors. If you do not bid farewell to all you have, it is the picture of one who carries a cross, who has to bid farewell to everything that they would hang on for their identity, their security, other than Jesus. It is complete surrender to recognize that your will has been outclassed. Now, there's good news about what God calls and what expects of us. It's good news. He has given to each of us the one thing that we need. It's the ability to surrender everything to his lordship. It was the question of a man's ability to build a tower. Would he not first sit down to consider whether he had ability to finish it? If he started it, if he laid the foundation but did not have the ability to finish it, wouldn't all those who saw it ridicule him, saying he started but he did not have the ability to finish? The king considers, do I have the ability to come against the person who is coming at me with 20,000 troops with my 10,000? If I do not have the ability to do it, then I will ask for terms of peace. God has given us the ability to surrender ourselves to him. He's called us to say no in order that we might say yes. He's called us to invest our lives in a way that we might finish our lives for the purposes and plans that he's made for us. And he's called us to total surrender. So the third question becomes, what do you need to surrender or bid farewell to in order to fully follow Jesus? These three questions are the three questions that help define what it is that Jesus called us to know the cost of discipleship and to estimate our ability to fulfill it. Jesus concludes the passage with a final consideration for all who would follow him. Salt is good, but if it loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It is fit neither for the soil nor for the manure pile. It just gets thrown away. You know, salt doesn't lose its saltiness. Even if you put it in water, you still know that the salt is there. If you put it in food, it seasons the food, increases the... You can't remove salt from saltiness. There was some procedure where they would remove salt from the crystals of the Dead Sea. But overall, what Jesus is trying to say is there is one path to discipleship and there is no other. He has taught us how to be his disciples, how to follow him, and he leaves no room for any other way to follow him. If salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? And so let us consider our own journey of discipleship, our own journey of God's expectations. We've understood his patience, his mercy, his goodness, his compassion. We've understood the true nature of God. And now he calls on us to respond to him, to say, if you understand who I am, then I have someone to make you into. Large crowds were traveling with Jesus, and turning to them, he said, if anyone comes to me and does not hate his father and mother, his wife and children, his brothers and sisters, even his own life, he cannot be my disciple. And anyone who does not carry his cross and follow me cannot be my disciple. Suppose one of you wants to build a tower. Will he not first sit down and estimate the cost to see if he has enough money to complete it? For if he lays the foundation and is not able to finish it, everyone who sees him will ridicule him, saying, this fellow began to build but was not able to finish. Or suppose a king is about to go to war against another king. Will he not first sit down and consider whether he is able with 10,000 men to oppose the one coming against him with 20,000? If he is not able, he will send a delegation while the other is still a long way off and will ask for terms of peace. In the same way, any of you who does not give up everything he has cannot be my disciple. Salt is good, but if it loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It is neither good for the soil nor for the manure pile. It is thrown out. He who has an ear, let him hear.